the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome once again to Vatican Insider. Before I look at the news, I want to tell you that this week in the interview segment, I continue my tribute to a wonderful friend, Paulist Father Jim Lloyd, who on Holy Saturday, April 3rd, 2021, turned 100. As you learned last week in part one of our conversation, Father Lloyd lives at the Paulist Mother House in New York City, where I've been a guest on many occasions. As I said then, last week, I've known many wonderful and interesting priests in my life, but only two whose life story should be a movie, and Father Lloyd is one. The conversation you're about to hear took place in New York right after Father Jim's 97th birthday and days before his 70th anniversary as a Paulist priest. Now, let's look at the week's news highlights. The Vatican announced this week that on Sunday, April 18th, Pope Francis will reappear at the window of the Apostolic Palace overlooking St. Peter's Square to lead the recitation of the Regina Caeli prayer with the faithful gathered in the square. The fluctuating course of the pandemic and the precautionary measures taken by the Italian government to curb the spread of the virus resulted in the Pope connecting on many occasions with the faithful exclusively through the media from the Library of the Apostolic Palace. Last year's first lockdown kept the faithful away from Bernini's colonnade between March 8th and May 24th, with the Pope leading Sunday prayers via live streaming from the Library of the Apostolic Palace. Now let's go to last Sunday, April 11th. This was Divine Mercy Sunday, the second Sunday of Easter, and the second time that Pope Francis has celebrated Mass at Santo Spirito in Sassia Church on this feast day. When all churches in Italy were closed last year for Mass due to the pandemic, Francis and a very restricted number of faithful marked Divine Mercy Sunday here. The story, of course, behind this day is that of a Polish nun, sister, now saint, Faustina Kowalska, an apostle of the devotion to Divine Mercy. During his many revelations to Faustina, Jesus asked that a feast day be dedicated to Divine Mercy to be celebrated on the Sunday after Easter. In 1994, St. John Paul declared this church as the Divine Mercy Spirituality Center. Only a small number of faithful attended the papal mass last Sunday, including male and female prison inmates, nurses, disabled persons, refugees, a migrant family, and some Missionary of Mercy priests celebrating with the Pope. And the Pope told them, "You represent some of the situations in which mercy is made tangible. It becomes closeness, service, care for those in difficulty." Pope Francis said, "The grace of receiving mercy is the starting point of our Christian journey. Only if we accept the love of God will we be able to offer something new to the world." And this is what the disciples did. Receiving mercy, they in turn became merciful. After Mass, the Pope recited the Regina Caeli from Santo Spirito Church. Monday, April 12th and Tuesday, April 13th were quiet public days for the Pope. However, the Vatican Daily Bulletin announced several private audiences as well as some papal appointments. On Wednesday, April 14th, the Vatican published the telegram of condolences from the Holy Father to Archbishop Adolfo Tito Jana, Apostolic Nuncio in Australia, on the death on Saturday, the 10th of April, of Cardinal Edward Cassidy. The cardinal was president emeritus of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity. Also Wednesday, the general audience was again live-streamed from the Papal Library of the Apostolic Palace, and Pope Francis began the audience by greeting the faithful tuning in and explaining, quote, "In our continuing catechesis on Christian prayer, we now consider the Church herself as a great school of prayer." He said that our parents who first taught us how to pray planted within us a seed that matures through our experience of the Christian life. Through the example of other men and women of faith, through our sharing in the life of our parishes, and above all the sacred liturgy, we not only develop our prayer life as individuals, but gradually come to appreciate the richness of the Church's patrimony of prayer and spirituality. The Holy Father pointed out that particularly in difficult moments in life, we come to realize the importance of prayer in strengthening our faith and hope. He underscored how history shows the importance of communities of prayer, monasteries and religious congregations, for the spiritual renewal of the Church and of society as a whole. Prayer remains the wellspring of the Church's life and the true source of her strength in bearing witness to the risen Lord. For this reason, Jesus insists on the need of his disciples to pray tirelessly and without ceasing. Thursday, April 15th, Pope Francis on Thursday morning participated privately at the funeral mass of Archbishop Felix del Blanco Prieto, held at the altar of the chair in St. Peter's Basilica. Archbishop Prieto died on April 10th at Rome's Gemelli Hospital at the age of 84. He had served as papal almoner from 2007 to 2012 under Pope Benedict XVI. Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin presided at the Mass. Also Thursday, the Vatican released several video messages filmed by the Holy Father. One was aired on the last day of the four-day International Congress, Mujer Excepcional, an Exceptional Woman, dedicated to the 50th anniversary of the proclamation of St. Teresa of Avila as a doctor of the Church. Pope Francis highlighted how prayer made this great saint an exceptional woman. Prayer, her encounter with the Lord, her determined determination, as she says, to persevere in her union with him through prayer, her firm intention to carry out the mission entrusted to her by the Lord, to whom she offered herself with simplicity. In another video sent to the Bishops' Conference of Brazil, Pope Francis urged the nation's bishops to help reconcile the nation and to comfort the many people whose lives have been affected by the pandemic. Intended as a message for all Brazilians, the Pope said Brazil is undergoing one of the most difficult trials in its history. He expressed his closeness to the hundreds of thousands of families who have lost a loved one due to COVID-19. Young people and elderly, fathers and mothers, health care providers and volunteers, church ministers, the rich and the poor, he said. The pandemic has left no one untouched in its trail of suffering. Brazil has confirmed over 13.5 million coronavirus cases and more than 361,000 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University. In yet another video, Pope Francis addressed participants in an international conference entitled A Politics Rooted in the People, and he urged them, like a good shepherd, to put the most vulnerable first. The Pope greeted the organizations present, including the Center for Theology and Community in London, that had organized the event. He noted the mission of these organizations is to accompany the people in their struggle for work, wages, and housing, and to stand by them when they encounter attitudes of opposition and contempt. With the pandemic, he said, this work is that much more urgent and necessary. Friday, April 16th, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI turned 94. Wishing you continued blessings, Holy Father. Well, those are the week's news highlights, but stay right here for my conversation with Paulist Father Jim Lloyd, who became a centenarian on Holy Saturday, April 3rd. No time this week for a Q&A. God bless. Have a great weekend.
All my life, I was searching for something that seemed to be just one step away. Perfect soulmate, the ideal job, that big adventure. And just when I thought I found what I was missing, I realized that I was never really fulfilled. Then I discovered what I was searching for was really faith in God and belonging to a church. You can find what you've been searching for too. Come and see at CatholicsComeHome.com.
Now, not only can you watch EWTN anywhere, but anytime with EWTN On Demand. Get on-demand access to more than 12,000 EWTN programs, including live shows and specials, all in one place, all free. Just go to EWTN.com/on-demand. There's nothing to fill out, no memberships required, and no fees to pay. All you need is an internet connection, and you're good to go. EWTN On Demand. Fast, easy, and free. Thank you.
I think we made prayer very complicated. You know, nobody has to tell you how to talk to a friend or a neighbor or probably somebody in the streetcar, or you pass somebody in a restaurant. It comes spontaneous, it's natural. Well, that's how prayer is, it's spontaneous. Sometimes you're just gonna speak from your heart.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome to the interview segment. In today's interview, I continue my tribute to a dear friend, Paulist Father Jim Lloyd, who, as you learned in Part 1 last weekend, turned 100 on Holy Saturday, April 3rd, 2021. Father Lloyd lives at the Paulist Mother House in New York City, where I've been a guest on many occasions. I've also broken bread many times with the other resident Paulists, including many who were former pastors of Catholic Americans in Rome when we were at Santa Susanna's church. As I said last week, I've known so many wonderful and interesting priests in my life, but I've known only two whose life story should be a movie, and Father Lloyd is one. Now, the conversation you're about to hear took place in New York right after Father Jim's 97th birthday and days before his 70th anniversary as a priest. Welcome back to part two of my conversation with one of the most amazing priests you'll ever meet, that maybe I've ever met, 97-year-old Paulist Father Jim Lloyd. In part one, you learned that his parents, his Jewish father and Irish mother, were in vaudeville. You learned of his early years in the priesthood, as a missionary in South Africa, his years as a student, his years as rector of a seminary, and on and on. We left the conversation last week as he was starting to tell us about his TV show, Inquiry. So stay here for more of that. I want you to tell us a little bit about the TV show.
My TV show is wonderful. The community said to me, you go down to NBC and do some TV shows. I said, I just came from Africa. I can't spell TV. So they said, go do it. You're a Paulist, go do it. So I did. So I come from from this poor background, and I sat down for 15 years with people like Mother Teresa, Malcolm Muggeridge, Bill Buckley.
Oh, I knew Malcolm Muggeridge.
Malcolm Muggeridge.
What a man.
Wonderful guy.
Oh.
Jim Farley, Elie Wiesel, Norman Mailer, Cabot Lodge, all these people. Every Sunday for 15 years, every third month, and we had a fantastic time.
What was the name of the show and the format?
The name of the show was Inquiry.
Okay.
And it was just, like we're doing it, just sitting down. And my theme was, I was trying to find out, is God relevant to any background? So I took all kinds of people. I said, does God mean anything to you? For example, Jim Farley, the maker of presidents, said he would go to confession in Cairo behind the high altar.
For heaven's sake.
He believed in the faith, that sort of stuff.
So really just a dialogue? Was there a topic? How long was the show? About
half an hour.
Was this the same time as Bishop Sheen?
No. He was national. Myself is tri-state.
Oh, okay. He was also NBC, wasn't he?
He was, he may have been. Yeah. But he was nighttime. He was national. He was just fantastic,
Sure.
Mine was more, pushing into the innards of people. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this? You tell me. I am here to elicit from you your knowledge.
To learn, right.
So I was not there to tell anybody what I know. I try to elicit from all these experts.
Inquiry, yes,
it's
exactly.
As we call it, inquiry. So whatever you've got, tell us. We are ignorant of your particular, your expertise. Tell us about you and what you know and what you think. So it was great.
Well, you had Mother Teresa on one time, I understand?
Yes, Mother Teresa.
Wow.
Was beautiful. I never knew her. And it was before she was popular.
Uh-huh.
And the studio said, we want to interview this nun from India. This little tiny lady.
She's smaller than a New York Minute, I'm going to tell you.
She's all bent over with Malcolm, and she starts to talk, and we're all spellbound. And I said to her, how do you support all of this? And she said, people just give. So I turned to the camera, broke the rules, and I said, if anybody wants to send Mother any money, send it to me, I'll get it to her right back. We got $5,000 in about 10 seconds.
Wow.
I just said that.
Beautiful.
And gave it to her. But she was phenomenal. I don't know what it was about her.
You had to listen to Mother Teresa. She could be talking in a football stadium, which is actually where I heard her once in San Diego, or you could talk briefly in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, but you were just compelled to listen to this. She had power and charism 10 times her physical size.
Yeah,
really. So tell me about Jackie Gleason. I loved his music.
Oh,
I loved his TV shows.
Jackie Gleason.
There's a whole generation listening to this program who may not know Jackie Gleason. Let me tell you, there's nothing like him today on TV, and we need it.
Jackie Gleason, to my mind, was one of the most intriguing people I interviewed. We did 2 half-hour shows, absolutely without any, no preparation whatsoever, nothing. He was very bright, very sharp, and he loved the faith. He was a roué, a womanizer, a drunk, and all of that, but he was brilliant, and he had great faith, and he was a very humble guy.
Wow.
He came in there all by himself. I interviewed other people with big retinues and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He came in all by himself and waited patiently for me till I came. And he sat there, and we talked about confession. And he said, it is the greatest feeling in the world. He said, when you go in there and come out, having been absolved, it's the greatest feeling there is. And I said, wow, what great propaganda for the sacraments.
Exactly.
But he was a very nice guy. And he laughed. We just drank coffee during the half hour.
Well, he was a comedian par excellence on TV, and then his orchestra.
Yes, I think.
I have a copy of every album that he ever made as well. So what fascinating people. Now, going back to what I said a minute earlier, when you were ordained, it was Pius XII, so there have been quite a few popes since.
Yes.
And then, so let's see, John the 23rd, Paul the 6th, John Paul the 1st, John Paul the 2nd, Benedict, and now Francis. And president. So president in 48, was that Eisenhower?
Was it Truman first?
I'm trying to remember who became president in 52. I mean, I was a kid, so what did I...
And I was an adult, but I'm 97.
Yeah, so right. Or Truman, yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Looking back at those 70 years of priesthood and humanhood, really, when you think of it, tell me some of the more remarkable changes, just as far as the church goes.
Well, many things about the church. You know, my sense of our faith is centered on the Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it's all about. And in these years that have gone by, I am frankly shocked when I hear that some people do not believe in the real presence of Jesus. And they come to church as a social kind of expectation.
Right.
They had just to be with the people and look good and all of that kind of stuff. And I am further shocked, I am in fact appalled. I was giving a retreat one time to priests, I won't tell you where, but one priest said to me, I don't believe in God. And I said, well, how can you possibly say Mass?
Yeah.
You don't believe in God, how could you possibly juggle it in your head? And he said, well, I am a community builder. He said, the Mass is a great platform to build community. I said, oh, using the Holy Mass or something like that is appalling, you know.
Yeah.
And I find stuff like that, if not that bizarre, at least priests take it just for granted. Or some say, well, we don't quite believe in the transubstantiation. We sort of have a general feeling of that Jesus is here, and that it's more or less the belief of the people. It's very Protestant from that point of view.
Sure, sure.
So that's my major gripe. That I think we are about the Mass, no matter what else
Absolutely.
We do and don't do. That's what it is. Now, when the Mass is downgraded, you know, it does something. Now, I do like facing the people, but I can see...
Yeah, because Vatican Council, too, obviously intervened in those
in
those years, so you would have grown up, and your first responses as an altar boy would have been in Latin.
In Latin,
And so now we have the vernacular.
And my Masses were all in Latin initially, too.
Sure.
I do like this. That is very meaningful to myself, too, when I say the Mass. I had 7 years of Latin, but I was not that really fluent. But the English makes a great impact on me. And I see our people, too, that we are joined more together. You know. And yet, on the other hand, I saw this enormous piety of my childhood. The churches were packed with people. not knowing a word of Latin.
Right.
And yet the piety and the devotion was incredible.
You're reverence. Right. That's what I think of when I think of early masses. Obviously, from my first communion on, the churches were thronged. My maternal grandfather was Lutheran until 6 weeks before he died. But, because my grandmother had prayed during their entire marriage for his conversion. But he always went to Mass on Sundays. All the kids were educated in Catholic schools, et cetera, et cetera. But he loved the reverence, just what you said, the reverence, the piety was so attractive to him, much more so than the Lutheran. Because he went to his Lutheran service after Mass. You know.
Well, I think, too, the doctrinal thing is something. The Paulists were strong advocates of the doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were not heads of cabbage. There were no wet noodles here.
Yeah.
These are all strong guys, and they spoke the truth regardless of what anybody thought. No ambivalence. They were very brave, very daring guys. I find now a lot of the homilies are vanilla. You know, it's almost anemic.
I remember about 3 years ago in my parish in California, this priest substituted our pastor who was as a Navy chaplain. He gave such a powerful talk on sin that, do you know what? The people stood and applauded him.
Wow.
It was a spontaneous reaction.
Right.
Nobody said, I want to applaud. That's just totally spontaneous. You don't hear that much more about. People are uncertain if certain things are sins. Do they know the Ten Commandments?
It seems to me, Joe, that the shift has been toward social justice rather than towards teaching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be a very great advocate of social justice and be an atheist, I suppose.
Sure.
You know, well, we believe in social equality. But we should be going that direction. And I love, like Pope John Paul, St. John Paul II, I love the thinking, you know, that it's very clear. This is revealed by God, mm-hmm. and we are simply passing on God's teaching. And when you see that whittled away, that bothers me.
I agree with you on that. Did you ever meet any of the popes?
John Paul, I got fairly close. And John the 23rd, I got fairly close. I never shook his hand.
Yeah.
No,
John the 23rd was the first pope I saw in Rome. When they had the audiences at that time, there was no audience hall. In 1961.
He was very lucky to live there in Rome.
Oh, I know. I'm blessed beyond telling. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And just all the papal events that I can attend and or help other people attend. Or in EWTN, of course, we bring them, all these events to people. So both of our lives have been astonishing in very different ways.
Very much so. Very much. And blessed. And we've enjoyed it, too. You've enjoyed what you've done. And I do thank God.
I love my faith. I do. And it, was it which gospel says, be ready to give people the reason for your faith and your joy?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the thing that bothers me in my old age about to meet my God. I say, I hate to see this beautiful faith, you know, so unsure, so shaky,
mm-hmm.
you know, so perforated with all kinds of holes, you know. It's supposed to be a unified position. And very, very clear, the Word of God himself is telling me this. And now it's, it might be, it might not be. It's, you know, who knows? You can believe what you like and be selective and cafeteria shop and that sort of stuff.
We've got the Catechism. We have the Ten Commandments. We have the Mass. We've got the Bible. And just participating in those, reading those, saying the rosary should keep us on the path and without the doubts. That's what helps me.
Me too.
I know what our foundation is. So I'm in the media business. When I read stuff that I would call appalling or ridiculous, I feel sorry for the people who are gullible enough to believe to believe it. I know my faith. I'm happy in it. And I'm not swayed in that respect.
Thank God. I think of Jesus talking about these people who mislead the innocent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, better for them that a millstone be turned around their neck and they're thrown into the sea. You know, to mislead all these good people.
Yeah.
Like the guys I deal with, these homosexual guys. These guys all have been pulled out of the lifestyle to live a life of chastity at great expense.
Courage, the group courage,
Mm-hmm. Great expense. And they try so hard. You know, they're saintly guys. But when you hear this, the rival group saying that, you know, the church has to give in here. Yeah. The church has to get with it, has to be normal and accept the marriages of two men or two women. You know, to me, this is almost, it's a contradiction. Of course, it's oxymoronic. How could anybody
say? Well, we're not a publicly owned company. We are a 2,000-year-old institution.
That's so well
and,
said.
I mean, if you want to change Kodak or Chrysler or something, go ahead and think about it. But what I tell people, too, is that who are concerned about what they read in the media, and I always tell them, go to the good Catholic sources. They're there. You know what they are.
Yeah.
But I tell people, you know, it's the media, the outside world, wants to form us, the Catholic Church, in their image and likeness, forgetting in whose image and likeness we are formed.
Paul in Romans, he says, do not conform to this age.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my thinking. I will not give in to these people.
No.
I just will not do it.
No.
You pay a price.
Sure, you do.
They call you Neanderthal, some kind of an ape or something.
Yeah.
You know, like Pope St. John II, Paul II.
Yeah.
Called him a Polak.
Yeah.
What does he know? He just says, some kind of a
at least slot. He's a Saint Pollock, right?
He's a saint.
I know. So, well, I could go on forever and ever, but I should have reintroduced Father Jim Lloyd halfway through this presentation. But I will be saying goodbye to you in just seconds here, Father. But to remind my listeners that on April 3rd, Father Lloyd turned the most young 97 you will ever want to meet. And on May 1st, if I'm correct, is the 70th anniversary of your ordination as a Paulist priest. So I'm grateful to have you in New York and your friendship and prayers. And thank you, and I'll be praying for you on May 1st, rest assured.
Thank you, Joe. It was a pleasure to see you.
I'll see you next year.
Praise God.
For more information on these stories or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.